that's what happens.
Our mics are live. At this time, I would like to reconvene this meeting. We'll move now to systems indicators and structure of our strategic plan. On December 1st, 2017, the Board of Education received a presentation on the strategic direction of the district and draft system indicators. Prior to anticipated approval on March 1st, Tom McDermott, Special Assistant to the Superintendent, and Dr. Heather McGilvery, Director of Assessment and Research, are providing the Board of Education with the structure for a new strategic plan and the long-term academic and non-academic goals known as system indicators associated with the strategic plan. Dr. Glass, anything you'd like to add before we begin this complex topic?
Yes, as you mentioned, this is a follow-up from a conversation we really had a couple of times in the evolution of the strategic plan. We've gone from the Generations document that was released this summer to then a conversation about that with the community to try and vet the ideas and concepts, to then your retreat in October where you had a chance to look at these different tactics and strategies to where we are now, which is really standing on the precipice of a new strategic plan for the organization. I'm really excited about this conversation. I think it's incredibly interesting. We could probably spend 4 hours working on this, but let's don't. And one of the things that's perhaps most interesting is the work around the system indicators and all the thinking and benchmarking that went into that. So the system indicators are created by thinking about what are the stair steps that we want kids to hit as they progress through our system, then looking at other systems around Colorado, around the country, even thinking, extending that out to systems around the world, and asking what does high performance really look like? And where should we be setting our goals in that context? So these guys will tell you some more about that work around finding those existence points of high levels of performance and then benchmarking Jeffco to that. But I think this is going to be a great conversation.
Thank you, Dr. Glass. Welcome, Mr. McDermott. Welcome, Dr. McGillivary. We look forward to learning about the progress we've made on development of the strategic plan since we last discussed it in December.
Great. Thank you for the opportunity to address members of the board and the community on the direction of the strategic plan. Dr. McGillivary and I are really excited for this topic as well. So we believe authentic student experiences must be at the center of our efforts to improve as a system. We also know that the conditions in which students learn and students' readiness to learn play a big part in student success. With a focus on these three themes, learning, conditions for learning, and readiness for learning, we drafted a theory of action that makes a causal connection between our efforts as a system and outcomes for Jeffco students. To be more precise in how we intend to organize our energies, resources, and efforts as a system and as educators, the next several slides outline a high-level overview of the strategies or the major focus areas and tactics reflecting a coherent set of more specific actions. So the learning strategy is made up of six tactics that, working together, seek to create authentic student experiences through a focus on student task, attending to individual needs and passions, and balancing the transformative power of technology with meaningful relationships and a focus on uniquely human capacities. Well, you'll see what's reflected here and on the next several slides, you'll notice is at a very high level. The organization, the Board of Education, and the community will have an opportunity to engage with the specific goals and actions for each tactic through a process called the stock take that will accompany the strategic plan. The first stock take to the Board of Education will be on March 5th. And the stock take structure is a way to facilitate organizational learning and improvement through a focus on these strategic priorities and incorporating feedback and dialogue with the members of the board and the community. So looking at the conditions for learning strategy, it focuses on systemic excellence and equity. It emphasizes teaching as a profession and best practices of the profession and high-performing systems to ensure all students work against high expectation curriculum and have equitable opportunities to succeed. The readiness for learning strategy acknowledges that some students come to school with barriers to learning, and as a system, we must We must work to mitigate those barriers through supporting the social-emotional needs of students and engaging our communities and families as partners in educating our students, beginning with our youngest JEFCO students. The work of the strategic plan is on the learning, the focus of the strategic plan is on the learning experience of JEFCO students. We also know that students, families, and our community rely on transportation, technology, resources, and communication efforts to arrive at and pursue authentic experiences. The next few slides also provide a high-level overview of the strategic focus areas from our technology, operations, finance, legal, and communication strategies to support student learning. Beginning with the technology strategy, the three technology tactics seek to build a secure infrastructure to support student and organizational learning. Operations strategy and tactics focuses on excellence and efficiency in the use of our facilities, transportation, and food services, and finance to transparently and equitably align district financial resources in alignment with the district strategy. Our legal strategy and tactics support a culture of professionalism through training and policy practices, and communication strategies and tactics meaningfully engage our students, families, and community. The implementation of the strategic plan is a continuous improvement process. We will learn and adapt in our efforts in collaboration with members of the board, our students, educators, and the community through that stocktake process while maintaining our focus on the student experience as our lever for improvement. In just a moment, I'm going to turn over to Dr. McGillivray to demonstrate the benchmarking practices we engaged in to identify the system indicators. The resources neighboring communities invest in their schools is part of that context. We appreciate every dollar our community provides us through their tax dollars, and it's our privilege and responsibility to provide JEFCO students the best learning experiences possible with the resources provided. And benchmarking against seven neighboring districts, JEFCO ranks fifth in per-student funding. I'll now turn it over to Dr. McGillivray to explain the goals we've identified as the system indicators and how those goals were determined.
Thank you. So now we're going to talk about the target setting process. As we know, when we set unrealistic and unattainable targets, the result can be frustration. And we want the system to stretch but not break. We want to look around and find other systems similar to JEFCO that have attained high levels of performance to know what is possible. And in this way, we establish a target that exists, or as Bob Lynn calls it, existence proof. Bob Lynn is a former professor at University of Colorado Boulder, a measurement expert. The next slides present ambitious targets set by finding other similar districts and setting those aspirational goals based on their performance. There are many system indicators here, and JEFCO is a large system that needs multiple indicators to represent its success. As an example, let's take a look at third grade. So we're going to click ahead to the appendix and look at the third grade slide. In this graphic, you can see that third grade performance on ELA and math are displayed with JEFCO compared to other similar districts. This is illustrative of the process we completed for each of the system indicators, including seventh grade CMAS, SAT, and graduation rates. We compared how JEFCO ranks with other districts and determined what is possible for attainment in Colorado. Looking at other districts, 60% is attainable for the highest performing districts. So we selected a target of 60% of third graders will meet or exceed on CMAS, ELA, and math as our system indicator. Let's go back to the tree. We repeated this process to determine ambitious and attainable targets for most of the academic indicators on this slide, so each of those ribbons on the tree. The detailed calculations for each indicator are included as an appendix in this PowerPoint for your review. Note that there were a few academic indicators where measurement comparisons to peer districts do not currently exist. So other comparables were used. So we created some academic indicators unique to JEFCO because the district values these areas and they fit with our new JEFCO Generations vision. For example, let's consider the equity growth indicator. This is a gap closing metric which would indicate that students from these identified subgroups, English language learners, eligible for free and reduced lunch, special education, and minority students are growing at a rate faster than similarly performing peers, which would lead to a shrinking of the achievement gap in Jeffco. We searched other similar districts to see existence proof of the highest growth percentiles for these subgroups and set those ambitious goals for Jeffco. The data used for comparison are contained, again, in the appendices. Lots of colorful slides for you to look at down there. So now let's look at the College and Career Readiness Indices, or CCRI indicators. We are charting new territory here, and we don't have other district data to compare to, but we knew we wanted to track two things: participation in these pathways, and then success or demonstrated success in these pathways. Of course, there are potential other pathways that might be developed and might emerge that will also demonstrate college and career readiness. So the CCRI will be dynamic as Jeffco evolves, changes over time, and fully implements the Jeffco Generations vision. But as an example, let's just go a little bit deeper on the CCRI and explain that indicator. The target is to increase participation in college and career readiness pathways so that 50% of secondary students in Jeffco high schools are participating in the CCRI pathways. Another target is for those participating, 85% of those will demonstrate success as measured by objective measures such as a 3 on an AP exam. Additionally, we're actively building toward other opportunities such as a seal of biliteracy. And now let's look at those non-academic indicators. I think that's the next slide, so let me see. Oh, no, the non-academic indicators aren't showing here. But the non-academic indicators, we have a robust set of school climate measures in Jeffco that include the perception of students, families, and employees, Make Your Voice Heard, Family School Partnership Survey, and the new Teaching and Learning Conditions in Colorado. These surveys have been modified to include items reflective of the district's overall vision and specific tactics in the strategic plan. And at this time, we'd like to just open up to questions that you have about these data.
Okay, thank you.
Enjoy this moment.
Won't last.
Well, first of all, you're so savvy to start by saying, hey, a stock take's going to happen on each of these areas of focus. So even though we're not going to spend 4 hours tonight, there really will be ample opportunity in the coming months to make sure that we are getting a regular look at how that's progressing. So with that in mind, I want to call out two things that I think are meaningful. The first is this sense of ambitious or aspirational goals. We want our educators and our students, everybody doing the work, to feel a sense of efficacy. But I also really appreciate that you're saying we're benchmarking ourselves against the best systems. I want to say I appreciate that. For me, that kind of leads to that aspirational examination, leads to a sense that we're going to have to push when it comes to matters of equity. So I heard a wonderful story about how Littleton Public Schools carried one of their priority improvement turnaround schools over the course of 4 years to performance. I also know that they invested a great deal of hours, people, and resources into that school in order to do that over time. So knowing that we're aiming for a sense of realizing significant, meaningful growth percentiles among our subgroups so that we are closing achievement gaps, knowing that we're looking for creating access to a lot of these career and college-ready opportunities for all of our students. One of my big takeaways is that issue of equity, which does live in our conditions for learning stock take, is going to be applicable to every stock take, to this ability to kind of measure how well we are managing to realize this vision that is articulated in Generations for all of our students. So,
I would like to piggyback off that idea with equity. It does flow through every one of the concentric circles, and I think one that we can manage and provide direction when allocating monies are in the areas of condition for learning, and when I think of equity, I don't, you know, there are, I think of not just equity in programming, strategic placement of programs, and or I also think of equity in facilities. And I'm wondering if there needs to be a bigger facility piece in a strategic plan, or is that coming in the future? I have a hard time even thinking of providing direction when I don't see that direction, because we have a lot of disparities in our facilities when it comes to equity, and learning environment is so important to a student learning. And I don't want to get off, just tell me that we will be addressing that at a certain date, or give me an idea of, because I'm still looking for the North Star, and in my head, the North Star is equity. Until it's defined by you guys.
And the directly quote the Prego commercial of my youth, it's in there. So there's a there is an element around facilities that's in the strategic plan. What you can expect to see is a stock take presentation around the current condition of our facilities, some goals or metrics around quality on that, what our current level of performance is in relation to that quality metric, some steps or milestones that we'll be taking to try and make improvements related to our facilities, and some what we call leading indicators, so some things that predict are we able to meet our overall goal. So you'll have a chance to do a deeper dive into the facilities and the quality of the facilities as part of this. But the operations elements include your transportation, your facilities, your food service areas, as well as the on the academic side.
But there are discussions as far as programming in conjunction with facilities. I just feel like we're either talking about one or the other, and I just don't think they happen in isolation.
And I think in listening to what you're saying, Ms. LaSalle, as I'm looking at that, and then my computer died, I just put a little note here down. We have conditions of learning, and then we had operations. And in operations, it talks about safe, secure facilities. I absolutely agree with everything you're saying. That equity piece in terms of conditions of learning flowing through to operations, I'm not just talking about safe and secure buildings. I'm talking about the inequity that exists in our facilities that is either perceived or actual impact on learning in that building for our communities and our students. So I was just trying to figure out how that plays in just based upon how it was in the slide.
I mean, I think there are two things, and Ms. Stevens mentioned it, is one is equity needs to be a lens through which each of these tactics is viewed. And that is absolutely the intention, is that we need to be looking at all of our tactics through an equity lens. And I do also believe that there's a lot of value in having equity be the focus of one of the tactics, and having a definition and some metrics around that, using whether it's academic outcomes or non-academic outcomes, of how we're breaking that out by demographics and really putting a spotlight on some of the equity achievement gaps that we mentioned and that are highlighted in the indicator. So I think it's really a two-pronged approach there, where we do have a tactic leader and a tactic team on equity, who, and a lot of what their work is influencing and making sure that equity is a lens through which each of the tactics, both in the learning, conditions for learning, readiness for learning, as well as in all of our operations, finance, really through which a lens through which we make all of our strategic decisions.
We have, just to extend on this a little bit, so the strategic plan is an evolving document, and our conversations around it will continue to evolve. So one of the things that we've been talking about is how you handle things like equity, mm-hmm. and the loose, tight relationship or dynamic, and innovation. So are those separate tactics on their own, or are they really sort of filters that you see the entire strategic plan through? Are they the right word would be, what are your organizational values? Like, and these may be the real organizational values that drive Jeffco, other than the ones that are, you know, in stone when you walk in the building down here. We really may be looking at shifting our values as an organization to be thinking about innovation, equity, and this balance of sort of having some systemness and having autonomy at the building level. So I think these conversations will continue to evolve, but we're going to have to think about where these things fit. Are they tactics that are independent, or are they sort of lenses that you see everything through? So I don't know the answer to that yet, but it's an interesting question about how we structure the strategic plan.
Have you seen that? And I don't know, because I haven't been in other districts at this level. Is it embedded in a strategic plan?
Well, I think you're breaking new ground here. This is the deliverology method that some other districts are using, and people do it in different ways. This is built on a similar approach that we used in Eagle, but I think this has evolved and improved beyond the way that we did it there. One, I guess, difference is when we did this work in Eagle, we didn't have a sort of predefined set of organizational values. And so the door was open to create those. And here there is a historical set of organizational values that's present. But when you think about mission, vision, values, strategy, tactic, all this stuff should line up. Here we're walking into some context where we have organizational values that have been in place for some time. But I think this process is going to cause us to re-examine those and ask, are those, as Patrick Lencioni says, are those aggressively authentic organizational values? Are they really what you're about?
I would say that some of these measurements will not occur until we resolve the equity challenges. So I guess that goes to your question whether or not it's a tactic or is it a strategy of its own, or what. I think that we're going to find that some of these are so ambitious that you must address the inequities in our system or you won't get to your goal. And that's as it should be.
Yeah, that's an interesting question too, is the sequence and the sequencing around these strategic plan efforts is an interesting one to grapple with, like what comes first, what's the most important things, and it's some elements of the strategic plan will be able to move forward immediately. Some of them are already underway. So the things that we're picking up and moving forward that were in Jeffco 2020, we've got momentum and resources, things are already happening around those. Some other things around, for example, transform and change the student task, that's something that we brought up on this year. We already have educators, curriculum staff, we have professional learning community time, so just simply changing what was being worked on with all of that resources allows us to move that forward. You've got some others that require real resources to move forward. So, for example, shifting to and really moving into a one-to-one environment as a district. It's going to require a lot of planning, a lot of thinking, and some dollars to move it forward at the level that we need to. Mm-hmm. We'll have to think about sort of what's the stage of development each of these tactics are in and how quickly they move forward. We'll have to consider resource allocation and how they move forward. But I really do think you have to approach it holistically, like you have to do it all at once. It's an organizational strategic plan, and the metaphor for the organization is an organism. So you can't just focus, I'm just going to work on breathing, right? Or I'm going to make sure my heartbeat is working, right? Or regulate my temperature. You have to be doing all of these things at the same time. Some of them may become higher priorities, or we may be able to make more progress on them. But you really have to be tracking all of this simultaneously. And if when we bring the stock takes forward, if we have a strategic plan that's not making progress, then we have to have some real conversations around what are we going to do about that. And if we look at each other and say we're not making progress and we're not doing anything about it, it's not a strategic priority. And that's a realization, or we have to confront that it's not a strategic priority and it needs to come out, because we're just really giving lip service to it. If we have it in the strategic plan, we can see it's not making progress and we're not doing anything about it.
Okay, so can I speak to that really quick? First of all, thanks for bringing up the fact that some of these are going to require resources, and I do want to understand what you think this district is poised to get a running start at, and which of those it's going to require some considerations on our part regarding budget. The second thing is that question of what really is a priority for us. I would appreciate it if that crosswalk that was really helpful in giving me a sense of how we'll lay out our work of really understanding progress on this strategic plan. Can we incorporate our board ends statements into that, recognizing that's going to give us a tool for handling our prioritization and making sure that document is living and dynamic so that we're adjusting where we can. I could take a shot at it, but I think you all are in a better position to know in depth what you intend to achieve and when we're going to need that lens of our board ends overlaid on these stock takes.
Yeah. I'll let Tom take the question around the ends.
Yeah, sure. So part of the stock take template and the structure is that we're going to align each tactic to the board end. So you'll have that explicitly laid out that we believe that the work of this tactic aligns with the board ends that you guys have identified. And then if there's an opportunity for us to have dialogue on whether those should be adapted as well, that can be part of a conversation.
And on the question of which ones are we running on or moving forward, those that have a connection to the Jeffco 2020 work, as I mentioned, you've already got those things moving. Some of them that we had existing capacity where we could simply shift the focus, and a lot of that had to do with transform the student task, all the work and conversations around that that's happening right now. That's another example of something that we're moving forward. Some other things that as I came into the district, I felt were early priorities. For example, shifting our communication strategy, shifting our branding and marketing approach. You can see the result of that in these documents as we sort of review these early drafts. There's a tangible shift in the look and feel and branding and messaging that Jeffco has, and that's been building for the past several months. So those are a couple of examples of things that we're making early progress on. Some other things, like, for example, the question of responsive teaching, or these MTSS or RTI, to use sort of education jargon terms. They're systems that look at how students are doing and then adapt instruction based on the student's response to the instruction. That's happening around Jeffco. I don't think that it's really been lifted up as a strategic priority. So it's happening. You heard Seth talk about it with Compass as something that they do, but where is the sort of systemness to that? Where's the supports as a system that we put around that? So I think you've got examples like that of things that are happening, but we haven't lifted them up as a strategic priority. Another example of something like that is the professional model of teaching. I think Jeffco's got a history of valuing educators and staff as professionals, but we're calling it out as a strategic priority here, which means we're going to have to get some definition around what do we mean by that and how are we executing that, how are we bringing it about. So when we say we follow a professional model of teaching, that's got to have some definition and clarity. We have to have some metrics around that. We have some clear action steps around that. So again, I hate to use the very unsatisfying, it depends, but each of these has to be looked at individually, and you have to think about the whole system and how they're all moving forward. And you wanted to say something, Heather?
I was just going to add that we've intentionally aligned our system indicators to our DOIP, to our board ends. You'll see the pieces come through there. And as we move forward, as with our system indicators, we had to create some things, and we're going to need to do that with some of our tactics, things we haven't really looked at in depth. We need to think about different ways to measure and monitor our progress. So it's definitely a evolving piece, was all I was going to add.
I appreciate the approach of the proof of existence, so looking at what the other best performing districts are achieving in Colorado. I was studying the appendices earlier, under early elementary indicators, seventh grade math, to be very specific. We set a 60% goal, but the highest achievement is Littleton at 47%. And so I'm a little hesitant to say, Why would we set a 60% goal when there's no indication that in Colorado that's been achieved anywhere, or even close, really?
So this slide is actually a little misleading. If you look at the ribbons on the tree, you can see that where it says seventh grade ELA math, it says 60% and then 50% for seventh grade. So they're so the seventh grade math is actually at 50%, which it would just be 3 percentage points higher than the highest performer there. But it's a good, I'll update that slide to have the 50th percentile on that one.
And the same with the SAT scores, that's high.
SAT score is high. It's higher than the national benchmark that SAT sets. But when you look at the other districts.
Okay. I'm just asking. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You can see at BVSD with a mean SAT of 576 and 564 in evidence-based math and evidence-based reading and writing. So you can see that's it's attainable. Mm-hmm.
This is also, I think, a great example of how that equity tactic will also overlay with everything, because we will not reach that if we're not bringing along our special education English language learners and free and reduced lunch qualifying students, which is the right expectation to carry for ourselves. So here we go. Yeah.
The aspirational versus the achievable, that's always a battle, because there are no modifications to that standardized test for kids that would need that to indicate their competencies and their abilities that is measured in the classroom in the modified and adjusted tests that we give to those students. So,
and as we set trajectories towards this, we can dig down on what other districts have around their subgroups around this. Some of it's publicly available. Some of it is asking our colleagues in other districts to help us look at that data and understand how they're performing with their students who are eligible for free and reduced lunch, how they're performing with kids who are on individualized education plans. So really trying to, it's a deep digging process. Mm-hmm. And of course, our learning circle has the most data, but as you move out towards the circle, we have less and less data, of course, around equity. So we're mm-hmm. going to have to get more creative about what indicators we have around equity and conditions for learning, readiness for learning, and as Ms. LaSalle pointed out, our infrastructure for learning. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to be clear for our community, because I know you guys know this, we're being aspirational partly because we have about the same number of special education students as some of these districts that we're benchmarking, mm-hmm. but we may have twice as many students in poverty. So mm-hmm. we're ready to.
And that's available in the appendix on slide, Carol, if you just forward a few slides there, that one. So you can see that we're very similar on special education, but you can see the differences there in free and reduced lunch and IEP and ELL, or and I should say NELL. Mobility as well.
You know, I rather than looking at percents, I almost would rather look at a number.
Sure.
That would be more meaningful to me.
For which one, Ellen?
For IEP, I just think it, you have 29%, and we're comparing us to another district that's half our size. They're individual kids, and we're serving, 19,000. It might not make any difference to anyone else. I'm kind of
humanizing it a little.
Yes.
Yeah.
It might not make a difference in any strategic direction for me.
Just whole numbers, process.
Whole numbers with whole people are what I, next to the percent, make more sense.
Yeah, we can do that.
This is not abstract. These are a lot of students' lives.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
That's just the way I think.
Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that we have to benchmark against what's, I hesitate to say, possible in Colorado. But I am also sort of aware of the fact that if you look at a lot of these appendices, there are, I'm sure, districts in the country that are similar in size and perhaps demographics to us that are achieving even higher. But I'm not sure it's fair to compare those to us because the circumstances are very different. Funding being an obvious difference.
Oh, I feel motivated to make the comparison then, partly because I really do think we need to make the case.
Well, that's right.
Here's what I really appreciate about this strategic, one of the things I appreciate. I am ready to use this as a lever. Our taxpayers and voters want to know, what are we getting for this added investment? And I want to be able to tell them, and it's going to be great to have some concrete examples of this is the work we're doing, this is what we believe is achievable, this is what it's going to take to do that. And I don't think it's wrong to say, let's inform our understanding versus what other systems are requiring to achieve similar results.
I like starting where we are. And in a way, the goals seem more realistic than wanting to be the best right out of the box, because that's out there. Thank you for that consideration. Sometimes that doesn't happen when I'm speaking for all the educators out there, when you see goals that seem so far out of the ballpark. So these don't seem that way to me, because I feel like you have looked at where we are and where we want to be next, and I appreciate that.
I think it might be a fascinating experience to try to overlay some resource components. I say that cautiously because truthfully, I don't want us to use that as an excuse. We don't need an excuse. And so I don't want to do that. But I think there is a correlation between resources and success as well.
Well, I think it's part of why the lens of equity has become so important, because we know we have what we have and our values are the same, and we're going to do what we can with what we have. But the reality is the other half of that equation is absolutely adequacy. And being able to articulate what it means to what would be adequate to do this, it is a critical portion of that conversation and one we need to have with our community.
Yeah, I wouldn't use the word excuse. I understand what you're saying, as opposed to this is the reality, and as an educational tool of what where else we could be, what else we would need to get there. In addition to all of this, it's a factor you cannot ignore.
Anything else from the board?
I just want to acknowledge the trying to measure the unmeasurable, your attack on that. That is uncharted territory, and I appreciate it. And I can't wait to hear how you proceed with that, because I think you're on the right track, and I think it's exciting work. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is clearly a difficult conversation. There will clearly be many more difficult conversations as we work our way through this process, but I believe it's the right work that we're doing. Mm-hmm. And so from that point of view, I simply want to say, let's continue doing the right work.
Yeah, I agree.
I think we're ready to say thank you, Mr. McDermott. Thank you, Ms. McGilvery.
Thank you.
We'll move on to, I believe, the next item on our agenda. This is our ENDS discussion agenda, and our first topic is Colorado Education Network. On January 11th, in accord with Board Exec Limitation Policy EL11, Communication and Counsel to the Board, and Governance Process Policy GP4, Board Job Description, the board discussed the work of the Colorado Education Network, a coalition of individuals and organizations who support public education and are committed to finding common ground to ensure high-quality public education is available to all Colorado students, and a draft resolution for support of that network. Every student, regardless of where they live or how they learn, deserves to thrive and lead his or her best life. Public education fuels not only the aspirations of students, but also provides the direct link between an educated populace and a vital economy. Colorado has one of the fastest growing economies in the country, yet does not adequately or equitably fund public education. There are real consequences for underfunding our schools that include students losing out on educational opportunities, schools unable to attract and retain qualified teachers, and growing inequities across school districts. Without adequate and equitable funding, a generation of children will face limits in reaching their full potential, and our state's future prospects will be limited as well. Board members, is there a motion on the resolution that is before us?
I move that the Board of Education adopts the resolution in support of adequate and equitable funding of Colorado public education and support for the work of the Colorado Education Network to ensure high-quality public education is available to all Colorado students.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we adopt this resolution. Board members, is there a discussion or clarification that's needed here? Hearing no discussion, and I know that this is the second time we've seen the draft of this resolution. Roll call, please.
Ms. Harmon.
Yes.
Ms. LaSalle.
Yes.
Mr. Mitchell.
Yes.
Mr. Rupert.
Yes.
Ms. Stevens.
Yes.
Our support of the Colorado Education Network is fairly clear. Next, we move to our policy work agenda. The annual work plan for the Board of Education includes the review of governance process, GP, or executive limitation, EL board policies. The board will now review executive limitation policy, EL5, financial planning and budgeting. I know this was provided to all of us. Are there suggested revisions to policy EL5? Hearing none, we will move on to our next agenda item, and I believe that is a review of policy EL11, communication and counsel to the board. Board members, any revisions that you find needed for policy EL11? Hearing no revisions, we will move on to our next agenda item. We now move to public comment part two. Before we begin public comment, I want to share some of the guidelines. The board listens with respect and asks those who address the board to do the same. This is the second part two of our public comment, which is a fairly open comment kind of section. As we work respectfully with community members and staff, so too do we request that our speakers' demeanor and remarks do the same. We have scheduled tonight on part two of public comment one group and two individuals. Let us begin with a group. The name I have is Nolan Miller. Nolan, if you would please come forward and be so kind as to either introduce or have the other members of your group introduce themselves, and we will allocate 10 minutes to your comments.
Hello, board members, and thank you for this opportunity tonight. My name is Jacob Austin, and for the past year and a half, I have bared the honorable title of head dodgeball coach at Evergreen Dodgeball Club. And so last fall, my friends and I, we had a dream to start the Evergreen High School Dodgeball Club. And initially, things went great, but soon after we discovered we could not be affiliated with the school nor the district in any way. We had 65 members sign up that year with all their signed waivers, and we had no choice but to go independently. Unfortunately, while we had a blast, our season was cut short due to a lack of funds. But in the face of adversity, we did not fold. And this year we bounced back with 82 members, and that is 8% of our student population. So we come to you tonight to make a reasonable case on why we should be able to leave a lasting legacy in which kids can get together in a fun yet safe way. And now I present to you Nolan Miller.
Thank you. As Jacob said, my name is Nolan. I'm the president and one of the founders of the Dodgeball Club. We come to you tonight to talk about the benefits of our club and what we've provided for our community. I'd like to piggyback on what Jacob said. We're 8% of our students' population, which is the third largest club at our school. Second to the Fellowship of Christian Athletes and DECA, which are both national organizations, and we are a local organization. Also, we'd like to report that zero injuries have occurred in the past 2 years, and our waiver is in full compliance with the Risk Management Department's waiver. We would also like to point out that skiing, river rafting, mountain biking, and archery are all still allowed as clubs and sports, where almost 1,500 people in the last 10 years have died participating in. Currently, in PE and gym class, dodgeball is still permitted where permission or where participation is involuntary and no waivers are signed. Also, in our state, the following districts allow dodgeball to be played as both a club and an activity: Douglas, Weld, and Denver counties. But how come we can't?
Hello. I am Jackson Detlefs. I am the vice president of the Evergreen, Evergreen Dodgeball Club, and also a co-founder. And I'm here just to mention the fact that without school affiliation, we have already been able to accomplish so much. I mean, just in the last week, we held a fundraiser in which we played Blacklight Dodgeball, and we were able to raise some funds there. And as my friend Jacob Austin has said, we have gained the membership of 8% of the student body of Evergreen High School. And this just leads me to wonder what sort of potential we could have if we are able to gain school affiliation. I think one of my main concerns regarding this dodgeball club is the fact that all of us here are juniors at Evergreen High School, so we will be graduating next year. And I'm a little bit concerned that the dodgeball club will not last beyond our graduation. And this concern is based in the fact that I think the transition of leadership will just be too challenging without school affiliation. I think with school affiliation, we will be able to have staff members of Evergreen High School help us to ease the transition of power. And I think that would be really great. And it would give us the ability to leave a lasting legacy on our high school, as we all want to do. And also, if we are able to get school affiliation, we would also be able to use the school gym rather than having to rent out the local recreational center. And this would greatly reduce membership costs and make our dodgeball experience much more financially available to many more students. That is all I have to say. Thank you.
My name is Boone Loesch. I am the secretary of Evergreen Dodgeball Club. As Jackson said, we want to bring this opportunity to as many people as we can. Inclusivity is one of our number one priorities. It's amazing to see new members come, enjoy their time at the club, meet new friends, and just have a good time all around. And becoming an actual school club will greatly increase our outreach program, be able to bring more people in to be able to experience this.
Hello, my name is Chase Barton, and I am the communications liaison at the Evergreen Dodgeball Club. And about a year ago, I moved to here from Hawaii after spending multiple years going to high school there. And Dodgeball Club was the very first club that I joined. And some of these gentlemen standing here are some of my greatest friends that I met through the club. And with going with that, you know, similar to what Jackson had said, the potential that if the school helps us is great. And I would be very happy to see what we can do based off of that.
Hi, I'm John Fillion. I'm the treasurer of the Evergreen Dodgeball Club. And to touch on once again what Jackson said, being able to use the school gym would really bring down costs for us. I've known more than once where we've had people, you know, really excited to get involved, seeing us playing at Wolf, and the financial cost, it's only $20, but if we could use the school, we'd be able to bring that down, and I think bring more people in and make it more inclusive for everyone. Thank you.
And now to swing it back to
So we ask you tonight to please reconsider your decision and realize that dodgeball has changed since your days of middle school and high school. We offer a clean, fun, and friendly environment that can lead to district-wide benefits and provide a great experience for all. Thank you. Do you have any questions?
We do not engage in dialogue, Nolan, and I think it's important that we stick with that precedent. I think you've done a nice job with the presentation, and so I'll say thank you, Evergreen.
Thank you, guys. Have a good night.
Our next speaker would be Eric Colmar.
Eric Colmar, and I'm 9505 Taylor Street, Westminster, Colorado, 80021. Wonderful teamwork for these young people. We should have a clap to them.
I know.
Thank you. And I think everybody would have a right as an expression of freedom to be able to clap, either that is appreciation, honors, or whatever, or individuals. I think that is a question of freedom of speech. The other question of freedom of speech, the 3 minutes we are allotted, I think it is too short. The Amendment 1 says we have a freedom of speech. Did not say how long, where, what, but all freedom without limitation. So if somebody will have a right to speak 5 seconds, that's not freedom of speech. If somebody will speak 3 minutes, that is a lot better. Now, might be a freedom of speech, but I would ask you to consider to have 5 minutes at least. So one somebody could explain one concept in that time. Innovation, 1 million. Well, I would ask you, why don't we do like in the real life? Somebody invents something, they will get a reward. If it is good, if it is not, nothing. So I would like to see a real life in education. Innovation, there are bad news and good news. Now, the good news is we have a lot of innovation. The bad news is most of them is no good in education. I could go to a first example. A math teacher in a college teaching teachers, he went back to the cavemen. How did they figure out things? So I asked him, why do we have to go back to the cavemen? A tradition is right with us. We start where we are, from tradition and up. These are about innovation. Another one is, one of the innovation was a classroom without wall, open space. I told you a second, open space. And it did not work out, so they abolished that, or very few schools doesn't now. First mat, it was going back to the everyday mat. They had to draw a square, square, and by that time they did the drawing, the kid with the traditional math solved the problem. And they still, it did not even start it. Oh, they changed it. Everyday math. And, oh, I'm sorry, just for a thing here. Investigative math. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Our final speaker this evening is Anita Springsteen. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Anita Springsteen, and I have 2 sons at Kendrick Lakes Elementary. What's the most important thing to any parent when he or she sends a child off to school each day? Safety, that your child comes home unharmed. My 6-year-old first grader did not come home unharmed on October 9th. He came home with a serious fracture of his elbow that nearly caused him to need surgery. My son had only had 10 PE classes in his whole life when he fell on the gym floor that day and hit his elbow. His elbow has been disfigured, and he suffered psychological trauma from this. And I can't tell you how excruciating the experience has been for me as a parent, especially because I know that if that gym floor had been safe, my son probably wouldn't have broken a bone. The gym floor at Kendrick Lakes is concrete with a thin 50-year-old industrial carpet over it that's kind of mashed down. In no way is this floor up to modern safety standards. Modern gym floor surfaces are designed with force reduction properties that allow give upon impact and provide absorption. This is why, for instance, although There are many falls in the NBA. Athletes rarely break a bone. I complained to risk management about the dangerous floor. The director stated that the floor was fine because the carpet wasn't worn out. I would disagree because it is worn and the carpet's a trip hazard due to drag. But beyond that, this did not address the lack of suspension in the floor. The director also stated that carpeted elementary gymnasiums in Jeffco are common, as it was a design standard in the past. He said the carpet at our school was not scheduled for replacement because, quote, as you know, capital improvement funds are scarce, unquote. It used to be that playground surfaces were asphalt, but then it became negligent not to put down gravel, rubber, or mulch to absorb inevitable falls. So why are gym floors any different? Well, I realize that the board makes tough decisions every day about how funds are spent. I feel that we're missing priorities here. Capital improvement funds are scarce, and yet we're spending millions to build out middle schools that are already, many of them, very modern. So it's difficult for me to think that children will continue to be put at risk and that modern safety standards are out of reach. We must address safety issues in buildings that are literally falling apart, and like you said, equity in facilities. Do I have to choose between hazardous and negligent conditions or homeschooling? It's not fair to children who depend on us to protect them. And this really must be addressed. And it plays into what you said earlier about perceived or actual impact on learning. You know, my son hasn't had PE or recess for several months, so it has impacted him. I thank you for listening tonight. Thanks.
Thank you. That concludes our public comment agenda for the evening. We will now continue our regular meeting, moving to our final agenda item, which is board work on our calendar. I would ask Ms. Neal to join us for board's discussion of our upcoming meetings. Thank you, Ms. Neal.
Mm-hmm. So your next meeting is a study session for February 15th. It begins at 5 p.m. And Karen Quanbeck will be presiding. Dr. Glass will be calling in to that meeting. So you begin with the second quarter financial report with members of the Financial Oversight Committee. Then you move to an update on PARA proposals. We will have the interim executive director and one member of their board joining us. Then you'll have a legislative update from Mr. Bowditch, and that is your agenda for that evening. We have canceled the 22nd special meeting with legislators to schedule it later in the year. Then you have the special meeting with the City of Lakewood on the 26th, which is Monday, beginning at 7 p.m. That is at the Lakewood City Council Chambers. And I believe there is some discussion going on about what that agenda is still looking like for that evening. Your next regular business meeting is March 1st, and you begin with some music, Stanley Lake High School. Then you have a report in study session, hopefully from the District Accountability Committee, on the District Unified Improvement Plan recommendations and the budget recommendations from the two subcommittees of that accountability committee. Honors and recognitions, we'll have hopefully many of those, and we are planning the Jeffco U graduation ceremony for that evening. You will have a presentation on Alternative Education Visioning Group. That's the group that Dr. Glass is going to be meeting with tomorrow, and they will be coming to present to the board on March 1st. Then you'll have a budget update on cabinet priorities, following the recommendations from the DAC on the budget that same evening. And that's your agenda at this point for March 1st. Okay. May change slightly between now and then.
Thank you. Board members, comments?
Go ahead. I have a couple questions.
Clarification on your meeting tomorrow for Alternative Ed Visioning Group. Is that our alternative high schools?
Who is that?
It's a conference of all the staff that work at the alternative high schools, so they have a professional development day, and so they're all getting together, and we have a couple of speakers coming in, myself, Scott McLeod from CU Denver, as well as sort of a panel of the leaders and some of the folks working in those buildings to share best practices. So that's what the day looks like.
That's great. I have a lot of those facilities in my district. I was just curious too. So, yeah, great. You have more questions, Ellie?
Just for future discussions, but let's go on with any questions you have about what's there.
Just to clarify, we will be getting that agenda before the Lakewood meeting is the plan.
Yes, I think we will have some information tomorrow to give you in your memo.
And are we both putting that together, our board and them, or how's that working?
I've had a planning call with Kathy Hodgson, the city manager. The president and I are meeting with Mayor Paul and Kathy to also plan through how that evening will go. So, yes, we're co-planning it with them.
And then my other question, and I'm sorry, my computer died, so I don't have that whole, maybe it's on here somewhere. I can't remember in terms of this process, when does the master facility plan come back before us? Is that part of one of these other presentations, or is that not the timing of this right now?
Well, I know that we are going to be scheduling the advisory committee to come to the board.
Okay.
In the spring. I think that's April sometime. And I know that we can schedule anything on the board's agenda that you'd like to hear.
Thank you, Brad. I just didn't see it.
You know, that's one of the things for future discussions for me, you know, with the ring around equity, that I would like to hear your vision, direction, what the cabinet's thinking, what our facilities department is thinking.
I'll make a note.
So I think
only if other people.
Yeah, I didn't see it on there anywhere, and Brad just pulled it up for me. I just, I can't remember. I mean, my memory was that this all kind of came together in terms of Kathleen's presentations. We had stuff from Tim and Steve, and I just didn't know how.
Generally, an April presentation from the Capital Asset Advisory Committee is scheduled.
Okay.
Perhaps we should add at least having a conversation with Dr. Glass about the possibility of a facilities update. It seems like it could be a priority topic. Maybe it can wait till when we have the Facilities Oversight Committee with us, but let's have that conversation. Is there anything else, colleagues?
A question, and I don't know where this goes, and I mean that, so I would like to know what you think. In the lottery that everyone's been dealing with today and school choice month, I'm wondering if it would be to me it feels like it would be really valuable information to know why people are choosing out of a school, and what would make that school a viable option for those families. I think that could significantly provide direction to where we want to go move forward. And then on the same note, why are you choosing this school? And tell us what attracts you to this school. Because I think that our intent as a board is to have every single school in our school district be an outstanding choice for our children and for our families. And I'm wondering, since we're in that month of school choice and people probably have to say, here, this is where I want to go if I'm choicing out, I'm wondering if we could have a conversation, or if you think it's a good enough idea to just do it, finding that out before they choice in somewhere else. So we can maybe in the next year be more strategic about programming, what drives people where. Is that a conversation to have in the future? Have you guys ever talked about that? We brought it up at the table a couple of times, but where do we go next?
May I interrupt?
Your voice.
It's me. Hi. We have a staff committee right now working on a choice enrollment digital platform, and that is one of the big things that we're talking about. So right now, because our system is paper, it's really difficult to gather that type of information. But one of the key components in looking at a digital choice enrollment is, first of all, everybody would participate in choice enrollment. And the first question would be, hey, here's your homeschool. This is, tell them about it. And then they'd be like, yeah, I want to stay here. Or, no, I want to look at other schools. And then it would bump down to, here's all the choices. But if they choiced in somewhere else, one of the questions would be, what factors affected your choice enrollment? And then we'd give them a bunch of things. And if they chose their homeschool, once again, we'd ask the same questions. What attracted you about your homeschool? So having the opportunity to do that. But obviously, with 86,000 students, it would be incredibly hard. I think we can do focus groups this year. I think that would be doable if we asked some schools for some choice enrollment forms. But as far as doing a broad base of, hey, this many people did it because of this, because of this, because of this. And we also want to hope to look for not just programming, but also things like, was transportation a factor? Was before and after school care a factor? Was the opportunity to have athletics or, you know, whatever kind of stuff like that? What were the factors that influenced your decision? So really big conversation we're having right now, going after some grant dollars and looking at some platforms that might be viable. And you'll be seeing that with the budget. I'm sure you're very excited about that.
When exactly? March 1st, April 1st?
We're doing the work on it right now. And if we can get some grant money and your approval for funding, that would roll out in January of next year. So next choice enrollment period, we would do that.
I'm going to need a conversation sooner rather than later because that's going to have some big implications.
Oh, it's got huge.
And I think we're going to need to bring any historical information and knowledge that the district has, as well as kind of next steps. Right now, a third of our families actively utilize choice enrollment, so I already have questions around this idea of.
And I don't disagree, and I'll let Dr. Glass fill you in on what the timeline is for that, but I wanted to let you know preliminary work is going on, and exactly what you brought up is one of the things that we've definitely discussed, and it's not like it isn't a big factor.
So I think let's add a future update for the board on choice enrollment patterns and our plans going forward with the online centralized choice enrollment system. We also, you got some updates around this, around with the entrepreneurial efforts. A lot of the motivation behind the entrepreneurial efforts is to identify where families wish to choice into and then create programming within Jeffco that's aligned with that. So there was a survey that was presented as part of that a couple of weeks ago. So we should bring that up and spend more time going through it with you guys. It was just kind of put up quickly as the lead into that entrepreneurial efforts conversation, but we should spend more time on it, and we can do that in an upcoming.
And I do value those survey results, I really do. But right now we have an active group of people choicing out of somewhere and choicing into somewhere, and I think the information that they have to teach us is invaluable.
We currently don't have any way to capture that, but that can be part of the discussion that we have, is what data would we like to capture going forward.
Okay.
And Diana makes a good point that if you have a system that's everybody's going into, you have a mechanism to gather it if we can move toward a electronic and centralized choice enrollment system.
Yeah, so I appreciate this dialogue because I honestly don't know nearly as much as I think I should know about the process, what happens to those forms, what does that look like. I would really welcome that.
I want to add something to that, and I don't even know if it's valid. But I think we need to be sensitive to, we're looking at this as a very positive thing. I think we need to be sensitive to the fact that it is possible to make it a very negative thing. And so how do we structure a system like this so that it turns out to be something that provides us with meaningful data but does not harm schools in the process? I don't know quite how to... This is just a thought that's not very solid in my mind right now, but I want to express it, and I hope we'll be sensitive to that as we move forward.
That's a good point.
I don't know. I'm not point. Saying it very well, Allie, I know what I mean.
It was an excellent point.
Yes.
You know what you mean.
All right. If you guys do, then I'll try to figure it out tomorrow.
That was the comment of the night. I like that one.
So, other things on our board work calendar?
I would love an update because I'm hearing so many great things about great teachers going to sixth grade here and sixth grade there at this middle school and that middle school. I would love an update, a weekly update about that, whatever. There is a lot of enthusiasm in the system about whatever happened last weekend.
We had a middle school hiring event last weekend at Creighton Middle School, and it was a high-energy place, and offers started to pour in on Monday so that Jeffco teachers could find new jobs in our middle schools. So I was hoping to have some firm numbers that I could put in your board update tomorrow. I'm not sure that we're quite that close yet, but there are people scooping up our great teachers.
They are, and it's great. Awesome.
Thank you, Ms. Weber.
One of the items that was at least tentatively for tonight, which is the alternative ed campus visioning, do we have a new date for when that might be coming to us?
Yes, it is coming March 1st.
All right. Sorry.
Keep up.
Got it.
He's got Took care of that one.
Took care of that one.
Anything else? Hearing nothing else, I think that concludes work. On our calendar, I would like to announce tonight that our board is looking at a possible pilot schedule that we will begin in March. We are intending to schedule our regular business meetings on the first Thursday of each month, followed by a study session during the day, starting at, I believe, 9 a.m. on the following Tuesday. Now, this is a major change. We recognize that. We would like to try this on a pilot basis and see how it works for us. We're going to do that this spring, starting in March. I also would like to let my colleagues know this is not about work calendar, but I want you to know that it's about my work calendar, and I am going to be out of town for a week starting this Saturday. I'll be in Washington, D.C. as part of CASB's Foreign Relations Network, and I think I'll learn a great deal over the next week and be back the following Saturday. Cool. Having said all of that, that concludes our work for this evening, and this meeting is adjourned.